Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd, and welcome to another episode of Meet the Press Reports. This is the program where we spend a half an hour taking a deep dive into a single issue. And in fact, this is the second of our two-part series on immigration and the border. I'm sure you just saw the first one, so now you get to see this one. And today we're going to focus on the Republican Party's evolution on this issue. We're going to start with one of the last things we heard in the White House from President Ronald Reagan in 1989, who was expanding on the shining city upon a hill vision that he used frequently throughout his presidency.
A city with pre-ports that hummed with commerce and creativity. And if there had to be city walls, the walls had doors, and the doors were open to anyone with the will and the heart to get here.
As president, Reagan signed the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986. The act increased border security. It penalized businesses which knowingly hired unauthorized immigrants. And it also extended temporary legal status and a pathway to citizenship to millions. These days, it's been shorthanded to simply Reagan signing a bill for amnesty. But three decades later, Republican President Donald Trump was promising to build a wall between the United States and Mexico. Folks, this transition did not happen overnight. Over time, views that were once on the fringe came to have more and more influence over the party's agenda, including at the state level. It started with a California Republican governor who needed to win re-election. It was Pete Wilson's Prop 187. It was designed to deny basic education and health services to undocumented immigrants. But as I said, it was also designed to help him win re-election. At the federal level, with Republican lawmakers scuttling efforts at a grand bargain in President Bush's second term, you also had the Gang of Eight effort under President Obama in 2013 and 2014 scuttled. And of course, the final failed effort under President Trump in 2018. So in this episode, we're going to look at how and why that happened, and also take a look at how immigrants themselves do end up shaping the country's politics. But first, let's start with my Telemundo colleague, Vanessa Ock, on how the party that once championed the shining city upon a hill came to vote for an impenetrable wall.
I think the time has come that the United States and our neighbors, particularly our neighbor to the south, should have a better understanding and a better relationship than we've ever had.
This was candidate Ronald Reagan at a GOP presidential debate in 1980.
Rather than making them or talking about putting up a fence, why don't we work out some recognition of our mutual problems?
So help me God. Now, congratulations, sir.
After he became president, Mr. Reagan's administration granted amnesty to nearly 3 million undocumented immigrants. The president believed that migrants were part of the fabric of American society. His vice president, George H.W. Bush, agreed, as did much of the Republican Party.
If they're living here, I don't want to see a whole thing of 6- and 8-year-old kids being made, you know, one totally uneducated and made to feel that they're living with outside the law. Let's address ourselves to the fundamentals. These are good people, strong people. Part of my family is a Mexican.
By the time of the 2016 presidential campaign, Republican voters embrace this.
They're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
Donald Trump launched his presidential bid, dismissing Mexican migrants as murderers and rapists, and promising to build a wall along the Mexican border.
Every citizen benefits when we have a strong, beautiful border.
As president, Mr. Trump cracked down on immigration, imposing a travel ban for Muslim-majority countries, separating families at the U.S.-Saudi border, and limiting asylum for refugees and visas for foreign workers.
So how did the Republican Party go from Ronald Reagan's welcoming immigration policies to Donald Trump's border wall and hostility? And what political price, if any, will the party pay for its get-tough attitude toward immigrants, especially those who entered the country illegally?
People who've come from nothing, willing to work hard to achieve something.
Former President George W. Bush has called on Republicans to tone down their immigration rhetoric.
Republican Party is divided. I said earlier, you know, that we're isolationist, protectionist, and nativist. What I really meant to clarify was that some elements of the Republican Party are that way, not all. I'm certainly not, and I'm a Republican. I also believe many Republicans know the system needs to be fixed.
I think the party has to change accordingly, and that's the change that is happening right now.
Dan Garza worked in President Bush's Interior Department and is the executive director of the Libre Initiative, a group whose mission is to empower the Latino community. He says Republicans need to decide what kind of party they want.
One that is more of a George Bush, compassionate, conservative type of party, or one that is more of a America First, Donald Trump kind of party. I mean, that's really, I think, the division right now.
Among the criticism voiced by Republican immigration hardliners is that immigrants are taking American jobs.
They're taking our jobs. They're taking our manufacturing. They're taking our money. They're taking everything, and they're killing us on the border.
Well, we know that all of the employers in the United States are always seeking to employ immigrant workers because they know that they will work very, very hard.
Dolores Huerta is a civil rights activist and a Latino icon who, with Cesar Chavez, fought for decades for the rights of migrant workers and co-founded the organization that became the United Farm Workers.
Immigrants come to the United States because they are trying to find a better life for themselves and their families, often escaping poverty, escaping violence. And so they are extremely dedicated.
I would say that most of our workers, if not 97 or 98%, are migrants.
Buenas tardes.
Joel Del Bosque is a farm owner in California, where a quarter of all immigrant workers live. He employs over 350 farm workers in the San Joaquin Valley. They are vital to his business because they do works others avoid.
They can work the whole day and they never complain. They're hardworking people, and we're very, very grateful for them.
Juan is one of Del Bosque's workers.
From the 7 years I have been working, I only seen like two or three people, white people, working here, African-American as well. They only come like for a day or two, and they never come back. They say it's pretty hard.
Another complaint from some Republicans is that illegal immigration is out of control.
And you're seeing this crisis at the border that is created by the Biden administration right now and by the Democrats in Congress.
Raul Labrador is a former four-term Republican congressman from Idaho who worked to pass immigration reform. He says President Trump's immigration policies were successful.
You saw the number of people coming to the border illegally actually go down. You saw the numbers reduced. You saw the enforcement increase. And that's what the American people want. And frankly, most Hispanics want that.
Illegal immigration at the border is now new. In fact, apprehensions peak early in the century, then stabilize for a decade before rising again. Still, a large influx of immigrants has unnerved many Americans who worry about the country's changing demographics.
I think there's been a concern, an angst about the changes in America, and a lot of that has to do, obviously, with, you know, how culture changes, how the face of America begins to change.
As you know, we have, they call it the caravan.
Despite his harsh anti-immigrant rhetoric, President Trump gained 4 points among Latinos in the last election. One reason, many Latinos hold traditional conservative views.
I'm a business owner, and I don't want the government to be telling me what to do or to put many regulations on me. For me, that's very important.
Latinos are naturally conservative because we believe in family, because we believe in our right to work and put food on the table for our families, because we believe in free speech. Because in our countries where either we or our parents came from, we didn't have that.
It's that kind of conservative-leaning attitude that encourages Republicans like Congresswoman Maria Elvira Salazar of Florida. She hopes a spirit of bipartisanship will eventually lead to meaningful immigration reform.
All they want is dignity. They do not want to wait for this path to citizenship that never comes. They want dignity now. And what does that mean? For them to be able to work, raise their American children, pay taxes, not commit a crime, and be able to go home for Christmas.
I'm starting to see members of both the Senate and the House coming together. I think they're starting to realize that the only way we're going to arrive at immigration reform is by working in this spirit of bipartisanship.
Well, let's talk to some folks who have seen this transformation inside the GOP firsthand. Joining me now is a former Republican congressman from South Florida, Carlos Corbello. Victoria DeFrancesco Soto, the assistant dean at the University of Texas's LBJ School of Public Affairs, and a good friend, Alfonso Aguilar, the president of the Latino Partnership for Conservative Principles and the former chief of the U.S. Office of Citizenship under President George W. Bush. I want to start with going back. I want to go back 9 years in time. I'm going to play a clip for you of Sean Hannity right after Mitt Romney loses to Barack Obama and just before the infamous autopsy. Here's Sean Hannity.
I think you control the border first. You create a pathway for those people that are here. You don't say you got to go home. And that is a position that I've evolved on. Because you know what? It's got to be resolved.
And so perhaps knowing that Fox was with them, the RNC did the infamous autopsy, March of 2013, Alfonso, the autopsy said, we must embrace and champion comprehensive immigration reform. If we do not, our party's appeal will continue to shrink to its core constituencies only. 8 years later, we seem farther away. Why?
Well, because we have a real problem. I think in that intro piece, you highlighted the rhetoric from Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. But those were different times. I think what has happened and the change in the party is due to the reality, the history of immigration. That's since the 1990s, we started to see dramatic surges of migrants trying to enter illegally into the country. So much so that Bill Clinton was the first one to build a border fence 22 miles in the border in Southern California with Mexico. So it is a real problem, this massive movements of people, irregular movements into the country. Now, and obviously that creates, that means that the country is changing also demographically. Settlement patterns have changed. So immigrants are going everywhere, wherever they're needed, where there's a job available.
Right.
And that creates uncertainty for American workers. And so the politics has changed. The environment has changed. So I certainly think that the tone during the Trump years was not great. But even President Trump during the 4 years, I think, started changing the tone. I remember in 2016, the tone was very anti-immigrant. By 2000, it was different. We had a White House that tried to propose a reform of the immigration system to make it more merit-based. We had a president who called for giving a path to citizenship for over 1 million dreamers. If Congress was willing to fund the border wall. So it was much more constructive. So I'm an optimist. I think that there are real problems at the border that explain the change in the tone of Republicans. But it doesn't mean that we're anti-immigrant. I think we want to do something constructive, but we have to accept that we have a problem of massive movements of people.
Victoria, you know, both of the comprehensive immigration reform proposals that got close, right? The one in 07 and the one in 13, both had security fence. Basically, it was the trade-off that everybody says you have to have. Border security for the pathway to citizenship. That if that compromise can't get through, then where do we go?
So I would say in the last few decades, the focus has been on this big omnibus immigration bill, comprehensive immigration reform. But what we're living right now is a very different time than we were 20 years ago. There's always been divisions between Republicans and Democrats, but we are in an uber, hyper, hyper polarized environment where it's tough to get pretty much anything passed. So in light of that, I think that we have to look at these smaller piecemeal bills. So let's talk about the Dreamers. Let's talk about temporary work visas. Let's talk about student visas. Let's talk about high skill visas. You know, there are a gazillion pieces that go into immigration reform. And I think this is where we're going to have to focus on. In an ideal world, it works together. That's where it is most effective, but we're not there politically. And I wanted to zoom out a little bit, Chuck. You know, I teach immigration policy here at the University of Texas. And on day one in my classes, what do we talk about? We talk about push and pull factors. And the truth of the matter is that not much has changed in terms of that. What we've seen is the demand from the American side continuing on. The problem with IRCA that you showed at the beginning of the clip wasn't the amnesty piece. And everybody focuses on the amnesty piece. One of the biggest parts of IRCA was about the employer sanctions, and that never was put into place. So over the last 30, 40 years, American employers have been hiring undocumented immigrants without any repercussions. So I think this is another key piece that we need to think about, is what is that pull factor that brings immigrants to the United States?
And Carlos Curbelo, we have a labor shortage issue. I'm sure you heard it from the tomato farmers in South Florida, which I think were in your district at the time, to folks out in California. You heard there. I've talked to a former congressman from Wisconsin, Reed Ribble, who said it's a massive issue in Wisconsin, the labor shortage here. And it's putting businesses, either they have to, in their minds, break the law or go under, because they can't find the workers.
That's right, Chuck. It's a true economic issue. It's not just about immigration. It's about the American economy and the needs that we have in this country, especially now. I mean, we have restaurants that can't find people to hire. I mean, a couple of friends of mine reached out to me saying if I knew anyone who wanted to work because they can't operate their restaurants. So this is an economic issue. But the reason we end up in this immigration dead end every time, Chuck, is because for both parties, the politics of immigration are too attractive. They are too enticing. For Republicans, it's really easy to blame anything on illegal immigration, to scapegoat undocumented immigrants, because, you know, for most Americans, they don't know an undocumented immigrant, or they may know them, but they don't know they're undocumented. So they don't understand that these are people, for the most part, who are contributing, who are making life better for themselves and for other Americans. And then for Democrats, it's also very attractive every 2 years to go to America's Hispanic community and say Republicans don't want anything to get done. They want to get everyone deported. They're anti-immigrant, anti-Hispanic. So that's why we get stuck in this dead end. Both parties have had the opportunity to get what they want. In 2018, we put a bill on the floor that included a $25 billion advance appropriation for border infrastructure, including levees in some of the most porous parts of the border. We had a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers in that bill. No Democrats voted for it. Donald Trump did not come out and support it, even though it included some of his biggest immigration priorities. Why? Because they wanted to talk about it in November of 2018, and they wanted to use the issue to motivate the base and to get people out, get them angry, and vote against the other side.
You know, Alfonso, language here has been an issue, and I wonder, and you look, and Donald Trump's language is quite familiar with anybody that spent decades in politics. I want to show a little mash we put together between Donald Trump's rhetoric and the rhetoric from somebody who was a bit on the fringe on immigration in the 90s. Take a listen.
Today, we call for a new patriotism where Americans begin to put the needs of Americans first.
America first will be the major and overriding theme of my administration.
Our own country is undergoing the greatest invasion in history.
We have an invasion of drugs, invasion of gangs, invasion of people.
We must take back our cities and take back our culture and take back our country.
We have to do something to take back our country.
Why can't we put along that border a security fence?
I will build a great, great wall on our southern border.
You know, it's interesting. Raul Labrador said that the failure to get immigration reform done is how Donald Trump ended up the nominee in 16. How is it that he was able to essentially use Buchanan's campaign messaging, which didn't work for Buchanan in 92 and 96? Why did that end up working in 16?
Well, because as I've said, you've seen an incredible growth of the immigrant populations throughout the country, really transforming cities and communities. Personally, I think for the better. But that creates uneasiness for American workers who see that income inequality continues, and it's easy to, that they have a harder time providing for their families. They have to work one or two jobs. And it's easy to blame immigrants. Just the fact that immigrants are arriving in the community causes uncertainty and uneasiness. They don't right. understand where they're coming from. There are cultural differences. So it's easy to play politics with that. Having said that, I wouldn't say that Donald Trump is Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan was a committed restrictionist, nativist. I don't think Donald Trump is. And as I've said, during the 4 years that Donald Trump was in office, every single year we issued a million green cards. Every single year. Every single year we naturalized over 700 to or over 800,000 new citizens every year. So we continue to be a welcoming nation. Now, yes, the system continues to be dysfunctional. We need to find a way. I think something that Donald Trump proposed was, and he was in a unique position to actually get something done because he had so much support from Republicans, was to provide a path to citizenship for Dreamers if Democrats were willing to provide funding for border fencing. That's an easy agreement going to Victoria.
And he didn't take it, Alfonso. And he didn't take it. The agreement was made and he didn't take it. I mean, I think that's what Carlos was saying. It was there. And he didn't take it, which is, I think, tells
you. And Chuck, let me just say, you know, whether Donald Trump is personally a nativist or not, you know, I can't get in his head. And quite frankly, I don't want to. Right. But that Donald Trump has used nativists for his political advantage, that he has excused those right. kinds of attitudes and that kind of thinking, there's no question. And look, in the short term, I think that's helped yeah. Republicans in some parts of the country. But in the long term, that is a losing strategy. Rising generations of Americans have right. no tolerance or appetite for that kind of thinking.
But Congressman, I think that's yeah. an unfair generalization because, yes, he's made some terrible statements, has had a very bad tone, but not only in immigration, on many issues. But let's look at the policy. When Donald Trump proposes changing the immigration system to make it merit-based, as Jared Kushner proposed, without reducing legal immigration, that's not anti-immigrant. When he proposes giving over yeah. a million people a path of dreamers, a path to citizenship, that's not anti-immigrant. Politics is the art of the possible. We could have achieved something even with Donald Trump. Democrats were just not there to get something done.
Victoria, I want to land this plane in an upbeat note. I want to play one of Ronald Reagan's last campaign stops that he ever made. Take a listen to what he said.
I received a letter not long ago from a man who said, "You can go to Japan to live, but you cannot become Japanese. You can go to France, you live and not become a Frenchman. You can go to live in Germany or Turkey and you won't become a German or a Turk." But then he added, "Anybody from any corner of the world can come to America to live and become an American."
Victoria, that is what makes our immigration system different.
Chuck, we are a nation of immigrants. On my dad's side, the different Chescos and the Feingolds came over through Ellis Island. And my mom, who's born in Mexico and crossed over 30 years ago, I am America, just as all immigrants who make up this country, no matter how long ago right. their forefathers came here.
Carlos, Victoria, Alfonso, I think this panel shows why it's been difficult and at the same time, why we all have to remain optimistic. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the impact of immigrants themselves on American political life. Stay with us. And we're back, and we actually got time for a special Meet the Press Reports edition of our Data Download. We spent the episode talking about how the issue of immigration impacts our politics. So now let's take a look at immigrants themselves, where they live, and how they do impact politics. So check this out. From 2010 to 2019, 68% of counties saw an increase in foreign-born populations, and nearly 200 counties saw an increase of 5,000 individuals or more. In fact, some of the places that saw the biggest raw increase in immigrants include Harris County, Texas, Houston, adding more than 225,000 foreign-born people alone. Others saw more of a modest increase, but big relative to the county's size. For example, Forsyth County, Georgia, saw its foreign-born population nearly double. In fact, sometimes as immigrants become part of the fabric of the community, they change the attitudes overall around them and can even become an important electoral bloc themselves. And that can make an area tilt in one direction or the other. In this case, here's a Democratic tilt. You look at Gwinnett County, Georgia. The Atlanta suburbs' foreign-born population increased 19% from 2010 to 2019. And guess what? It went from going to John McCain by 11 points in 2008 to being a Biden stronghold in 2020. There are, of course, other factors at play in that shift. Suburbanites moving away from the GOP, college-educated voters, but clearly, the growing immigrant population also plays a role. But in other cases, as groups of immigrants move in an area, there can be a backlash among longtime residents. So, for instance, take Lucerne County, Pennsylvania. That's home of immigration hardliner and former Congressman Lou Barletta. Its foreign-born population increased by 61% over this last decade. But look at this. It went from being an Obama plus 9 state in 2008 to a Trump plus 15 state in 2020. Now, over time, a lot of these foreign-born individuals became naturalized citizens, and that's a chunk of the electorate that is significant and growing. So, for the 2020 election, Pew estimated that more than 23 million eligible voters were naturalized citizens. Believe it or not, that's about 10% of the entire potential electorate. It's more than half of those eligible voters are Hispanic or Asian, which our exit polls tell us right now tend to lean more Democratic as a whole. But it is such a large portion of the electorate, naturalized citizens are a key group for any candidate running for office. Trust me. So that's all we have for Meet the Press reports this week. Next week, the most educated generation in our nation's history is without a political home. Tune in for more on the future of millennial politics on NBC News Now and Peacock. And of course, I'll see you this Sunday on Meet the Press.